following is a message at Living Savior Church in Asheville and Hendersonville, North Carolina. To learn more, go to lsavior.org.
How do you typically do with commands? Or more broadly speaking, expectations, demands, somebody who obligates you in some way, shape, or form? How do you typically react? All the naturally rebellious people start to squirm, crinkle their noses, maybe because you don't like that if somebody interacts with you in that way. Maybe also because you're a little bit worried because you just heard the Ten Commandments read, and then the pastor asks you, how do you do with commands? And you're wondering, oh boy. See, that's a complicated question, and you can't just answer it one way, shape, or form, regardless of how you typically might react if somebody obligates you or puts some expectation over you. Because so much depends on what the command is, and so much depends on the person offering it to you. Like if a random person, a complete stranger, walks up to you and says, I need you to sign this petition. And I want you to call this number, here's the QR code. And it goes straight to these legislators, and I want you to say these things. You don't know the person. And let's say you maybe agree with the agenda in part, but would you do all of those things just because you were commanded to do so? I know I wouldn't. But let's say you have a close friend, somebody who you spent a lot of time with. You grab lunch, you grab coffee, you call them when you are in a bind. They're the type of person who can give you the conversation that you need when you really don't know where to turn or what to do next. And let's say they say to you, hey, can I expect that we're not going to talk about this particular subject anymore? I feel like it leads us down two different roads. And also, if you're going to reach out to me on Tuesdays, can you text first? Because sometimes if my boss hears my phone ring, he gets a little frustrated. And then also, the next time you swing by, just give me a call or just give me a heads up. I got this neighbor who doesn't, you know, kind of gets their, he has some issues if people come by and they're not really expecting it. Now, those are actually commands. You might say they're actually requests, but that person is putting an obligation on you that you would do. If it's a close friend, there's not a single one of you who would be like, take a hike. No, because those commands were not just communicated in a very friendly manner. Those obligations, those expectations exist in the realm of this relationship. And so are you inclined to keep them entirely? Of course you are. Not just because of the nature of them, but the nature of the relationship in which those commands or obligations exist. So what do you do then when you come into contact with the commandments? Maybe you were one of those children who started to learn them in Sunday school. You got to dig into them deeply when you went through catechism class, or maybe a Bible study, a small group with other people, and you really started to explore what these commandments mean. And we're going to get into them a little bit more in depth in a moment. When you come into contact with these commands that God gives, the principle and the paradigms that we have in this world are no different. Commands work best in the right relationship. Of course, that means we get to delve into the meaning of them, but then how meaningful that they are from there on out. So what is the context in which God gives these commands? If you page backwards from Exodus 20, get to Exodus 14. Even the prior chapters, you have Moses leading God's people out and God opening up the Red Sea in Exodus 14 and leading his people on dry ground, swallowing up Pharaoh's army and all of his chariots as the sea crashed back into place, leaving them under that watery grave. Exodus 15, Moses leads them in singing this song of triumph. We'll see a glimpse of it at the Easter Vigil on Easter Sunday. And then God leads them, even though they're in a wilderness and they have absolutely nothing to take care of them. He brings water out of a rock. He brings manna and quail out of heaven itself. He feeds them and he leads them. He provides and he guides. He even helps them overcome the Amalekites. These aren't an army people, the Israelites. And yet with God's direction and his provision, his sovereign care and his gracious plan in place, he takes them all the way down to the Sinai, the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula, and there at Mount Sinai, he tells them, wash up. On the third day, I'm going to descend onto this mountain, and I'm going to speak to you. Clean up. You got 3 days. And they did. No touching the mountain. And they didn't. And they shouldn't. And they wouldn't. And then, Exodus 20, you saw it. You read it. You can imagine it. God descends, and then he opens his mouth. And what are some of the things that God says? He walks through the Ten Commandments. Now, before we get to these Ten Commandments, I want to ask you a question. Do you think that these Ten Commandments, similar to that person I mentioned before, the stranger on the street that says, sign this petition, follow this QR code, make these calls to our legislators. He kind of puts that out in front of you. Do you think the Ten Commandments should be out there and in front of us? It's very interesting when you start to look at churches. And I learned this week, I didn't know this, that some of the first churches in our nation, settled by those pilgrims, those Puritans from long ago. Puritans were those that really emphasized outward Christian obedience in their behavior. They would have the two tablets right up front. As you look, you think that would fit? Tablet number one, tablet number two. Or maybe on specific days we could press a button and then there's like this veil that would drop, the two tablets covering up the cross. That probably wouldn't be good. So let's just, what do you think? Two tablets, one on the left, one on the right? I'm not proposing architectural changes. I'm just getting you to think about it. A friend shared that with me this week, actually, that in the Old North Church, there you have it, right up front. And you probably know this, that what a church puts up in front says a lot about what they believe. Now, even outside of churches, there are people, and there are even school buildings, old school buildings, where the Ten Commandments might be outside, and some still propose that that would be a wise thing to do. Or also, the debate probably gets most heated and is most familiar when people discuss the Ten Commandments being in courthouses, in front of people. Now, I have to ask you, when you put those commands in front of people, you put those commands in front of Christians like us, you put those commands in front of people who aren't Christians, you think that helps? Regardless of where you stand on the issue of whether or not the Ten Commandments belong in the front of our local courthouse or any courthouse for that matter, I just have to ask you, as you look outside, is that working? When you just put commands in front of people. And then think for yourself, when you put these commands in front of you, is it working? It certainly wasn't working for the Israelites. I mean, imagine if God opened up the ocean and said, follow me, and you walked by with a curtain on either side of the ocean, and you watched him take care of that power behind you, that army that was threatening you. And then he feeds you out of nowhere, manna and quail. And then he causes water to come out of a rock. He causes this otherwise bitter pool of water to become sweet. He takes care of you out of nowhere. Do you think that that would be the time where you would start to complain against God? To say things like, you know, we should just be back there in slavery, it'd be better. It just wasn't working for the Israelites. And so God has to give them these paradigms, and not just in lieu of, and not just in retrospect on account of all of the ways that they had been complaining about God already, which had already happened in just these brief chapters, but also because they are about to have a long road on the pathway to the promised land. And so he gives them these commands, and what do they mean? Commandment number one, he says, you shall have no other gods. And this one is the one that governs all of them. God calls himself a jealous God. And what is he jealous over? He's not jealous about what you do with your hands, as though that's it, and what you think. He's jealous of that first place spot in your heart, because when that is in place, everything else falls in place. And God knows that. When he is there in your heart, that controls absolutely everything else. All of these other commandments, 2 through 10, fall into place. You shall have no other gods. And that does not just mean, especially in our context, that does not just mean that we have to make sure that we check everyone's closets to make sure there aren't any like idols that you've fashioned. Because I'm pretty sure none of you got down on your knees this morning and bowed a few times to some fake statue in your closet. Safe bet. That's not what he's talking about alone. That was a problem for the Israelites. But he's talking about what we call a hidden idolatry. Those secret things inside our hearts that start to dominate our mind and our thoughts, that start to push God down on that ranking system to a lower rank as we think about things, as we pursue desires, as we strive for certain successes or achievements, and those things become a greater priority, of greater importance than God. That is what God is jealous about. The idols of the heart. Commandment number two, you shall not misuse the name. He's not just talking about cursing or swearing. He's after the way that you view everything about his name, particularly also the place where you find his name, namely his word. The things that you think about and the way that you speak, is God's word guiding it? And the way that you view God, is it reverent and mindful? Is it submissive and honorable? Third commandment, remember the Sabbath day, the one who fulfilled it all, namely Jesus Christ, then leads us to live lives of worship and to revere God in our worship life, like what we're doing right now. But also then how we view God's word, is it a chore? Is it a box that we check? I mean, don't be duped like those people in the gospel for today. Those people in the gospel for today, those ones that were running that marketplace in God's house, Jesus had every right to be angry, righteously so. Because they were leading people to think that as long as you check some of these boxes, then you're going to be okay with God. Oh, and heinous crime upon heinous crime, they were making money off of it. Jesus says zeal for God's house consumes him. Zeal for what is going on in the heart. Are you here because this is something you got to do? Otherwise, pastor's going to call you if you're gone for a couple weeks? Or a member might follow up? Or is this because this is where you find the living water that cannot be found in the desert of this world? These commandments allow us to analyze. Honor your father and mother, and it's not just mom and dad, and it's not just something we use with kids. It is every type of authority that God has put over us, that in the government, that even in the church, and also that in the home. Do we see that as God's guidance and structure for our good, or something that we shake our fist at, a system that we buck? Thou shalt not murder. No homicide here. Moving on. Or is he calling us to some deeper meaning in the way that we view our bodies and the way that we care for life as a whole? Life that only God gives and only God decides when it goes away from this life. And not just my body, but the lives and the bodies of every single person around us, because those bodies are connected to a soul and they are precious to God in every way. You shall not commit adultery. Haven't cheated on my spouse like some people. Moving on. No. Jesus says, if you even look at another lustfully, you've already broken that commandment in your heart. And the God who does not need a microscope or a telescope, but sees every thought and intention, knows, just as you know, the things that we look at, whether it's a link that you click, an image that you still remember, the thoughts that you have that are not just a passing second glance, the thoughts that cross our minds that say a whole lot about what's going on in our heart to the God who knows us and loves us and expects purity? Question mark. Thou shalt not steal. Really goes hand in hand with 9 and 10. Thou shalt not covet anything. As long as he says thou shalt not steal, okay, I'm not a thief, but it's not just that. Are we seeking to do the positive, that is help our neighbors keep their possessions and everything that belongs to them? And not only that, 9 and 10, to not even covet the things that aren't mine. Because to want the things that God has not given me, what am I saying to the giver of all, except that what he gives is not enough? I wish I had is a way of saying, God, you haven't. Allowing our thoughts to be dominated so much so, whether or not we steal is not necessarily the only point. It is whether or not God looks at our heart and he sees contentment. It's no secret. Well, it really is a secret, contentment. That's why the Apostle Paul says, I've learned the secret of being content, because it is a secret compared to the rat race and the keeping up with the Joneses that this world is filled with. The one I skipped over, number 8, according to our numbering. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. Isn't it fascinating that even with inside the family of believers, I would argue the most commonly and easily overlooked sin, namely gossip itself, the maligning of somebody's reputation, gets its own commandment. Because, you know, if we look at that one person who's dressed a certain way, that one person who's done things that we haven't done, and then to talk about them, a reputation that exists in the minds of another person is so easily lessened, if not destroyed. And we all know that respect and reputations is the hardest thing to earn. And the quickest and easiest thing to lose. What we say matters. How we view one another and how we help other people view one another matters. Not just to us, but to God. So, what do you think? Tablet one? Tablet two? Just like the old North Church? Any takers? Maybe post-Bible study, we can have a conversation about that. We might know an architect we could talk to. We could talk colors. Something that would really make it pop. Like white with really deep red lettering. I'm obviously hyperbolizing. Because when you look at the commands as an Israelite, what do you see? God comes down and it is like the loudest trumpet ever as the entire ground shakes and quakes and everything rumbles and trembles and nobody even wants to get close. And God opens his mouth and he says over and over again, you shall and you shall. And here are these giant boxes for all of your life and you are to check them perfectly. For even the epistle of James says, if you keep the whole law and break it at just one point, you are guilty as though you broke all of it. So where does that leave us? The commandments. When you let them actually sink in as to what they all mean, and you consider your own track record, is it even a track record or is it more like a rap sheet? Because I know that mine is a rap sheet. But remember, commands really only work well in the context of, what did we say? Relationship. Because then it helps you understand the meaning of those commands and how meaningful they are between you and the person who gave them. When you look at your life and you think that, Lord, I have not kept a one of them. I mean, you gave me 10 and I'm 0 for 10. If you sit at the free throw line back in the day when I had a coach, if you shot free throws, you had to shoot better than 70% as a team. Otherwise, our coach made us run the next day. Because he would say, they're not just called throws, they're called free throws. They're free points. And you should at least get 7 out of 10. And if you don't, maybe your legs aren't strong enough. Maybe your stamina isn't quite where it should be. And I know one way to fix it. That's what he would say. So we would run. 7 out of 10 is decent. 8 out of 10 is really good. 9 out of 10 is stellar. 0 for 10? You ride the pine. You don't play. Certainly, 0 for 10, you don't stand before a holy God who, on account of his holiness, does not lessen his holiness and say, 90% will do. We're 0 for 10. But these commands exist in the context of relationship because although God said a lot, you shall and you shall not. When God opens his mouth, and by the way, when he does, he opens his mouth wide. He opens his mouth wide first to let you know who he is and what his relationship with you is. Because what are the first words out of his mouth? It is not, you shall. The first words are, I am. Capital L-O-R-D, the God of promise, who promises to punish those who are not part of him and belong to him, but promises to only be gracious and compassionate to those who keep his commands. And my friends, the only way you and I can keep these commands is not about us at all. And that's why we put a cross, and just a cross, prominently in the front of our church. Because it is the one who came into this world to check every single one of those boxes. For every time that we hear, you shall and you shall not, God says, I am, even louder. And the I am is carried out in the one who is the keeper of every command, the one who followed every single decree, the one who never had an impure thought, word, or deed, the one who experienced temptation in every way, just as we do, yet was without sin every single second of every single day, so that just as we said in the children's message, it's like this perfect coloring. No, a perfect painting. No. A perfect life worth eternity that covers over us like a beautiful robe. So instead of seeing the scars of our misdeeds and the blemishes of our past, instead of seeing the regret and all of the muck along with it, God only sees Jesus. And that seems like it's foolishness to the rest of the world that's trying to achieve and check boxes and demonstrate its morality and righteousness against everyone else. It just so happens to not be working. But Jesus declared his work finished. Not just a perfect life, but a sacrificial death that covers over you in every single way. What did God say? I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Your God has brought you out of slavery too. Shackles of the law that would otherwise condemn you have been broken by the one who kept them for you. The oppressor that is a picture of the devil himself, who accuses you and points out rightly everything that I've done. And what do I have to say for it? The devil presents all the evidence to God and says, let me tell you about Caleb. Boy, do I got this guy dead to rights. And is he wrong? No. But then one stands up in my place, the same one who stands up in your place too, Jesus, who already paid for it all. And so what does the accuser have to say then? Nothing that counts. God will not listen because the gavel has already dropped and he's already declared me right in his sight on account of Jesus, not because of anything I've done, but because of what Jesus has done in my place. And this is the God who has established a relationship with you. Don't take my word for it. Take his word for it. Take his word for it when he says, I am the Lord your God who brought you freedom, who released you from slavery. This is the same God who put his name on you and brought you into his family in the waters of baptism. This is the same God who does not give manna and quail anymore. He gives something far better, the body and blood of his own son, which feeds you with forgiveness and even fuels you properly with motivation to serve him. So now as you think of the Ten Commandments, it's not some stranger on the street. And it's not even just a friend. It's the God who loves you and sets these out before you as a path to follow him, to help free you and protect you, to guide you and provide for you, so that you don't fall into the pitfalls that will never be for you, what only God can be for you. So instead of this slavish uphill trek to try and reach the precipice that is God's holiness, no, instead it is a stepping stone, a pattern of living, a moral code that God gives you, knowing that he's already released you from eternal punishment in his son, and he then gives you the pathway forward to follow him, not because you have to, but because you and I, in view of the cross, want to. God grant that to us all. Amen.